In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Time to talk movies. Let's 18 after 5 o'clock on your Monday afternoon. And we're happy to welcome in from The Main Edge our friend Alan Adams. Welcome back, Al.
Hey, thanks very much.
Good to have you with us. We missed talking to you. We shared the information last week that you had lost your mom, a terrific woman, and again, our condolences from the whole Downtown crew on that.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. You know, it's been the last 2 weeks have been pretty hard, but yeah, we're, you know, we've spent a good long time remembering her over these past few days, and that's been something that's been really celebratory in a way that I think has been very, you know, it's helped to start the healing process, I think, for a lot of us. So, of course, much obliged to you for your participation in that process. I don't know that we would have been able to do it without you. So thanks for that.
You better believe it. Glad to lend a hand, my friend. Well, you did get to see a couple of movies, at least a couple this weekend. Where should we begin?
Well, I figured what we would do because I didn't get a chance to chat with you last week. I thought I'd do a couple of quick hits on the movies that I saw last weekend.
Sure.
If that would be all right.
You bet.
Yeah, one really good one, one really bad one. The really good one was In the Heights, the film adaptation of the wonderful Lin-Manuel Miranda musical. I'm a sucker for a movie musical myself, and when it's as so clearly built on a foundation of joy and love for both the art form and the subject matter, it's hard to resist something like that, and this was really just an excellent example of that. Performances, the songs, the production values, the whole shebang, just a phenomenal movie-going experience, to my mind. And on the flip side of that, we have the unfortunate The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, which...
And this is not good. I'm shocked.
I know. It's the sequel to an also not good movie called The Hitman's Bodyguard from a couple of years back, starring Ryan Reynolds and Samuel L. Jackson, both of whom are back. Ryan Reynolds is the bodyguard. Samuel L. Jackson is the hitman. And in this case, Salma Hayek is the wife. It's remarkable how little attention apparently needs to be paid to plot when you're making these sorts of movies. Because it just didn't make a lick of sense. Like, you're just just so many questions just kept piling up. And again, I don't need my handheld, and I'm not expecting, it's a sequel to a Ryan Reynolds, Samuel L. Jackson, Midnight Run ripoff. Like, I'm not expecting Shakespeare, but, give me something that I can actually, that I can track. What minor charms the first film had are just gone. It felt very cursory, very perfunctory, very much a everybody getting cashing them checks, including and it broke my heart to see him. Morgan Freeman is in this movie for reasons that I'm not going to go into. Suffice to say, he's his connections to the main characters are not what you'd expect. But yeah, so In the Heights, great. The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, bad. got that out of the way. So let's talk about the ones that I saw this past weekend.
All right, that sounds good.
Actually, a couple of pretty good ones. One that surprised me, one that didn't. We'll start with the one that surprised me. So I watched this movie, Fatherhood, on Netflix. It's a Netflix original, and it stars Kevin Hart. And I could take or leave Kevin Hart, if I'm honest about it.
Yeah, me too.
Sometimes he's fine, other times he's not. But I'm very lukewarm on Kevin Hart, particularly as a movie star. But he is reaching that point in his career where he's doing the thing that so many comedic actors do, which is making the effort to move in more dramatic directions. And so he is trying to take his talents from the one sphere and explore whether they transfer to another. And as we've seen over the years, that process doesn't always work. And sometimes it's a real—I mean, it's a real disaster for every, Adam Sandler in Punch Drunk Love, or Jim Carrey in Man in the Moon, or what have you. There are a dozen others who just tried and just fell on their faces. I gotta say, I expected this movie to be bad. Like, I really did. Like, I was prepared for it to be, hacky and maudlin and formulaic. And to be fair, it is some of those things. But there's a surprising amount of, and I hate myself for, it has a surprising amount of heart. it's this movie about a single father struggling with grief and loss while he's trying to, ensure the best possible life for his child. It's based on a memoir by a man named Matthew Loughlin called Two Kisses for Maddie, A Memoir of Loss and Love. While it is formulaic, and it's got a solid cast, and Hart's performance in particular it's subtler and more nuanced than I ever would have expected from him. The plot and the narrative beats, they're not going to surprise you, but he actually might. And that's saying something. Like, there's value to that. So the basic gist is Kevin Hart plays a guy named Matthew. He's on the verge of becoming a dad for the first time. He's nervous. He's excited. The way that first-time fathers everywhere are. He's scared, but he's got a wonderful partner in his wife, Liz. His own mom is very supportive, as are her parents, Marion and Mike. They're played by Alfred Woodard and Frankie Faison. But then tragedy strikes in the days immediately following his daughter's birth, and so Matthew is now a widower. Like, he's a newly single father, left to raise an infant while he's also grieving this loss, and he's utterly unprepared for either of those things. The baby girl, he names her Maddie, looks like it's going to be a lot for him to handle on his own. So much that the three grandparents try to convince him to move back home so they can easily more help, sort of help him. But he decides he's going to make a go of it of himself, and he's got friends, and they have his back, particularly a pair of excellent turns from Lil Rel Howery as his friend Jordan, and Anthony Carrigan he plays a character named Oscar. Anthony Carrigan was NoHo, what's his name, from Barry, from HBO's Barry.
Oh, right.
Here. Yeah, he has some early stumbles, but he finds his footing. And, before you know it, we jump ahead in time, and Maddie, played wonderfully by a little girl named Melody Heard, is a precocious six-year-old, just the apple of her dad's eye. He's not the perfect dad, but he's doing his best, and he clearly loves his daughter. But circumstances start to change in his life. There's this potential promotion at work that comes with a lot more travel. He starts to think about maybe dating again. And so these questions start to arise once more. And those pressures are mounting. He has to decide if he can even let anyone else in, or if it just has to be him and Maddie against the world. And plus he's trying to make sure that his dead wife is also a part of Maddie's life. But he needs to decide when or if he's going to try to more fully live his own. And it always boils down to what's best for Maddie. Like I said, I had low expectations. I figured we'd get this sort of maudlin, heavy premise basically wrapped around a very slight variation of the usual Kevin Hart shtick, and that would be it. And it's funny because that's kind of what you do get, but it's much better. It works much better than I thought it would, because this is a very toned down Kevin Hart. Like, it's far more reserved and restrained than we've seen before. Frankly, I didn't think he had it in him, if I'm going to be honest about it. And, there are some occasional comedic elements, that's inescapable, especially considering the backgrounds of not only of Kevin Hart, but some of the actors who are surrounding him. But they're more flourishes than foundations, if that makes sense. They lighten the mood, but they feel grounded in reality. The sorts of laughs that people laugh because they don't want to cry. Like, those are the sorts of, that's the sort of levity that we're getting here. And it really does serve to heighten the dramatic impact. And again, this is the sort of movie that could be a real downer, but it never really gets to that place. And it, like I said, it's a little predictable. The surprises are very few and far between with regard to the plot and all that. But within the confines of that predictability, it actually works pretty well. And again, you got to credit Kevin Hart here. Like, I mean, he's dipped his toes into these more sort of dramatic waters before. I think The Upside, the movie he made with friend of downtown Bryan Cranston a couple years ago, is sort of leaning in that direction. But it was still very much a Kevin Hart sort of shtick. And, you know, he's never really been asked to lead in carrying this sort of heavier emotional load. I've always found him as someone, there's a great deal of artifice to his comedic performances in that sort of extremity that makes him a little tougher to engage with. And that's practically gone. And it's the sort of thing I wouldn't have thought he would be able to suppress it. But he really is quite good here. And then you've got a stacked supporting cast. Like, Alfred Woodard's an icon. Like, she handles her business like the pro that she is. Howery and Kerrigan, I mentioned, they're a hoot. I worried that they might be a little too present, but they're around just enough to provide a little balance. And like I said, the young lady, Melody Heard, is just a delight. Like, you know, she's very charming. She captures that precocious nature without ever really succumbing to that hamminess that sometimes strikes young actors. So like I said, it's got its shortcomings, to be sure, but the performances are good. And it really does prove well worth your time. Like, laughter, tears, you know, tragedies, triumphs, like all the stuff that comes with being a dad. Honestly, I was pleasantly surprised by Fatherhood.
Yay. All right. Excellent. And one more that you saw. Tell us about Luca.
Okay. So, look, Pixar doesn't need me to come on here and sing their praises. Like, they've been producing exceptional work for, like, three decades now. Like, they've essentially redefined the possibilities of American animated filmmaking. Like, and, you know, and a lot of their movies are, like, legitimate, like, modern classics. You know, and I'm not just talking among the animated sphere, like just full stop movies, like iconic sort of films that are beloved by everyone, audiences, critics, you name it. They're fun, they're funny, jokes and references aimed at every level of the audience. But that success can kind of be in a double-edged sword sometimes, because they've shown themselves capable of crafting these sort of masterpieces. They also sometimes find their efforts being viewed as disappointing or sort of dismissed if they offer up a movie that is merely, you know, very good, which is not really fair. Again, I always have to include the addendum. We're not including the Cars sequels in this conversation, because I feel like someone just got lost in the animation studio for 4 years, and those two movies kind of popped up because they're so distantly behind the rest of the Pixar filmography. But anyway, and there are going to be people who argue that this latest offering, Luca, directed by first-time director Enrico Casarosa, and it's currently streaming on Disney Plus, and not as sort of the premium access, like it's just part of the regular service. You know, they're going to argue that it's minor Pixar, and they're not wrong. Like, but what we have to remember is that even lower-tier Pixar is almost certainly a legitimately good film, again, leaving aside the aforementioned Cars sequels. And that's the case with Luca, which is charming and touching. It's this wonderful little coming-of-age tale about fitting in and making friends and accepting yourself for who you are. Like, it doesn't have that sort of full depth of emotional complexity that we often see from Pixar. I mean, you'll still have plenty of feelings, but it's definitely feels more directly kid-oriented than some of the more layered movies we've seen, particularly in recent years. But it's a delightful movie experience, like one that I think will probably prove to resonate a little more fully with the younger audiences than some of the more celebrated kind of adult conscious fare that they produced. So Luca, voiced by Jacob Tremblay, is a teenage sea monster living in the waters off the coast of the Italian town of Porto Rosso. And it's never specifically established, but it's sometime in the 50s or 60s, like sometime mid-20th century. He spends his days herding fish and being generally curious about the world above. And it's a world that his overprotective mom and dad, voiced by Maya Rudolph and Jim Gaffigan, respectively, kind of want to keep him away from. But a chance encounter leads to him making his way to the surface. He follows a fellow sea monster named Alberto, played by the wonderful Jack Dylan Grazer, and discovers that when he dries off, when he's on land, he turns into a human. And so, you know, instantly, Luca and Alberto become fast friends, and they start sharing, you know, Alberto shares his vast and questionably accurate knowledge of the surface world, and the two sort of dream of seeing the rest of that world by way of getting a Vespa, which is hilarious. Eventually, they decide to make their way into the town proper. They meet a young lady named Julia, voiced by a young lady in her feature debut named Emma Berman. She's a young girl in training for the city's annual triathlon competition. And it's biking, swimming, and eating pasta, which, again...
Wow, I like that.
And the race is annually won by this this older kid, an arrogant jerk by the name of Erkel. You know, Luca and Alberto offer to join Julia's team, and they get taken in by her and her father, this big one-armed fisherman dude named Massimo, voiced by a guy named Marco Baricelli. He's never done a feature before, but he's a delight. But as Luca learns more and more about the surface world, he's sort of captivated by the possibilities, even though he and Alberto must remain ever vigilant to avoid revealing their secret, because if they ever get wet, they turn back into sea monsters. The whole deal with this town is they have a fundamental and generational fear and mistrust of sea monsters. So that's complicated. But as the race approaches, Luca's relationship with Alberto gets strained. Luca's parents make their way to the surface to try to find him. And ultimately, he's left to decide what's really most important to him and whether he's willing and able to do what it takes to get to that place. Now, again, this movie doesn't deliver the same degree of emotional impact that we get from some of Pixar's other offerings. Like, this isn't one of, you're not going to get that the emotional gut punch that Pixar delights in giving you isn't here in this movie. And that's okay. Like, it's not a movie that's meant to dig into that sort of morass of feelings in that same way. It's a much simpler movie, you know, content to explore themes with a little less weight. And again, I don't mean to imply that what we get isn't important or impactful. Like, I mean, I have a well-documented affinity for coming-of-age stories, and this is frankly a pretty darn good one. The underlying ideas of embracing our differences rather than fearing them is, I mean, we could all frankly benefit from that, specifically these days. Also worth noting, this is a stunning visual film. And again, all Pixar movies are technically accomplished, but this one really sort of splashes across the screen. It's got this wonderful, vivid aesthetic that's genuinely beautiful to look at. Like, individual shots that are just like small ones, big ones, in between ones that are really breathtaking to see. These tiny moments and these huge moments that just land exquisitely. Add to that some wonderful character design and stuff like that. And it's just like it's just a wonderful looking movie. And the cast is winning as well. Like, you know, Jacob Tremblay and Jack Dylan Grazer are among the best of what I think is, we've talked about this a number of times. I don't think that Hollywood has ever had a larger crop of incredibly talented young actors all at once. And these two are close to the top of that list. And they both put their abilities to really good use here. The chemistry is great, and it creates a real kind of friendship dynamic that, you know, it's going to ring familiar to viewers, no matter how, you know, young or old they might be, you know. And shining supporting cast, you know, Maya Rudolph, Jim Gaffigan, both, you know, bringing their A games. Sacha Baron Cohen is here at one point. He's Luca's weird uncle who lives in they just call it the Deep. And so he's like one of those weird looking see-through fish. He's only in a couple of scenes, but he's hilarious. But yeah, like I said, like, I think ultimately this movie is aimed more directly at younger viewers than a lot of Pixar's recent offerings. But that being said, yeah, sure, there's a little less narrative sophistication, but it develops depth in other ways. Like, and the messages are clear, the themes are engaging, the cast is great, and the aesthetic is just mesmerizing. So there's a lot to like here. Now, does this movie reach the heights of Pixar's greatest? No. Like, no one's going to put this one in the pantheon. But it is a gentle and gently entertaining reminder that even second or third tier Pixar pretty much guarantees you a high quality movie experience. So yeah, Luca, I really dug it.
Excellent. Well, good stuff there as always. Alan, great to have you back. We appreciate it. And well, let's do it again Wednesday if you're up to it.
Yeah, let's talk on Wednesday.
All right. We'll catch you then. Have a good night.
You as well, man.
Thanks, Alan Adams with us on Downtown Pass the Popcorn, talking movies every Monday afternoon.